welcome to Unstuck, the podcast for solo business owners who want things to feel better. I'm Libby Langley, business coach, author, and your honest voice of reason when business starts to feel a bit messy. Each week, I help you get unstuck from whatever's holding you back, whether that's overwhelm, overthinking, or offers that just don't quite work, so you can build a business that actually works for you. Here's this week's episode. Do you remember the moment when you realized you were never going to work for someone else ever again? Isn't that a powerful moment and a powerful thought to have, right? I knew I was just done with the whole corporate world. Well, I worked for the public sector, but, you know, kind of in a corporate role. And I just knew. I just walked out one day. I was like, I'm done. This is enough. This is horrible. That was 14 years ago and I haven't looked back. However, it's kind of 14 years down the line that I can reflect on, actually, it wasn't a spur of the moment decision. I mean, it was at the time. However, my entire life to that point had been building up to the point of going solo. So I want to tell you the story of that, really. A lot of it will resonate with you and a lot of it will help you understand kind of why you have the desire that you do to work for yourself and why, indeed, you do work for yourself. So, welcome to Unstuck. I am Libby Langley. It's very nice to have you here. And I had my first entrepreneurial thing, test of entrepreneurialism, when I was really quite young. And looking back, it's interesting because I didn't know anybody who had their own business. My parents were both teachers. Dad was deputy head. Mum taught part-time support, teaching stuff. I don't know, the neighbours, they all had jobs. Everybody had jobs. Family members, everybody had a job. I didn't know anybody who had their own business. And if I did, then I didn't know about it, if that makes sense. It was certainly not something that was ever thought about. And in any conversations through my schooling about what I might want to do, nobody ever said, why don't you work for yourself? It just wasn't something that was considered then. It might be different. It might be different now. It's a long time since I left school. But certainly it was, I don't know. So I had no influences, right? However, I clearly had an entrepreneurial streak in me without realizing it. So very early on, I was really young and I had a friend next door. Still a friend, but we lived in a village and she was an only child, 18 months younger than me. And I had an older brother, but so the two of us were like sisters, really, kind of did everything together because there was no one else to talk to in our village, really. And so we used to do these things and I would come up with these ideas and she would, you know, follow me because she was younger. And so I got to do that. And one of the very earliest things that I remember us doing on my early days of entrepreneurial journeyism was making and selling pom-poms, right? You know, when you get the circles of cardboard with the hole in the middle and you wind the wool round and that makes, and then you cut it and you tie it and you cut it and it makes a pom-pom. Yeah, we made those. We made those and we sold them to the neighbours. And I don't remember how much they were, but I would imagine they were probably 5 or 10p. And yeah, we made them and we sold them. And that was the first little business. So not enormously successful because we had a very limited audience and clearly ran out of steam and got bored with it. But it was making something and selling it, which is not something that I'd been taught to do, right? It was just this idea. And then there was a magazine called Star Magazine. And I still have copies of this. I think we did 6 or 7 episodes, issues. And Star Magazine was a mix of current affairs articles. The Enormous Crocodile by Roald Dahl was lovingly typed from a book. Copy typed, so that wasn't very interesting for anybody to read. An interview with the old guy next door. So interviews, you know, current affairs issues, a few jokes. People got to submit letters, which was largely my dad who got to do that. And, you know, it was a real proper magazine. And there were, I two, if not three copies made each month or each week. I don't know how often they came out, but we had these, you know, half a dozen episodes or something, issues. And people bought them and they were 20p because I still have one of each issue. And it must have been over one summer and they came out every week. I can't remember now. But yeah, and I think I was probably 12 or so then. So it was a lot of work. And to make these different copies, we just had to type everything again, me and Caroline. But it was great. And people bought them and really, really enjoyed doing it. And I've always actually been interested in the kind of writing and publishing side of things. I went on to work for various magazines when my first proper jobs were work for magazines. So I've always, and I write, you know, I like writing stuff. So I've always kind of been interested in that world anyway. But it was interesting. It was the creativity. We designed the cover and I think there was a giveaway one month because we found some pens with stars on them. And so it was quite cool, really, to do that. And there was one summer that my brother and I ran a tennis club. That was a pound to get in. And I still, to this day, do not understand the rules of tennis properly, right? And do not try and explain it because I'm also not interested in learning, right? But we had a tennis school one summer and it basically meant that we had a swing ball, you know, the poles with the balls on the string. We had a swing ball and the neighbouring kids would pay us a pound and came round to join our tennis school. Can't remember if we taught them anything because, to my knowledge, my brother doesn't know much about tennis either. Certainly didn't then. But we were teenagers, you know, we were youngish teenagers then. And so that generated a bit of money. And none of these things lasted that long, but they showed a real kind of flair for doing something different. And I think importantly, doing something that people paid you for, you know, creating something that people paid you for, which was so different to having a part-time job. And I was too young to have a part-time job for those earlier things. But it was just a different way of thinking. And I, you know, I remember being encouraged to do this. And I mean, back in the 80s, nobody cared what you did, right? As long as you came home for your tea. So doing all these things, either in the bedroom or out wandering the street, selling stuff to neighbours. I always felt like they were kind of successful. And then when I got my first part-time job, so I was 13. God, that's a lot of years I've been working. Whew. That's nearly 40 years that I will have been working. That's just horrible to think about that. But anyway, when I was 13, I got my first job, part-time job. And I did a paper round. However, I didn't just do a paper round. I was a junior agent, which meant that because I lived in a village, there wasn't a news agent that served the village, right? So the things from the two local papers, there was the daily paper from the big city, the Leicester Mercury, and also the weekly Harbour Mail. So there were two papers that served that village and that surrounding area. And I got the contract for both of them, but I got it direct with the companies rather than via a news agent. So news agents would pay you, I don't know, like £2 a thing, what do you call them, a route. Then I've no idea, but you know, it wouldn't be a lot of money, but I would get all the money that the news agent would make, right? And all the tips that people would leave me because it was in a village. I remember one Christmas, I got £90 in tips, right? I used to get Easter eggs and I had 30 houses. That was it. And so I did this 6 days a week. So I was the junior agent there. And it was a business because I had to count all the money. I had to send the money off. But, you know, mum would write a cheque and I got to post the cheque and I don't know what happened to all those 2p's and stuff. Probably my mum went and paid them into the bank, I don't know. But it would, you know, it was a real business and it kind of taught me about actually handling quantities of money because it was quite a lot. Fridays, when I used to collect the money, it was quite a lot. And I think I did that for 2 years. And then I handed it over to another kid in the village because I went and got a job in the town where I got paid a bit more and I used to, you know, be able to sell cigarettes and stuff. So I was a bit older and I wanted the hours, I think, then. So I guess that's when my entrepreneurial streak took a little rest, I suppose, because I got a job I got a job in a newsagent, and then I got a job in a petrol station, which sold alcohol, and I had to be 18 for that. And then I got a job, right? When I finished school and all that stuff. So then I got a job. So that was different. And I think over the years when I was in the working world, a lot of my entrepreneurial spirit was killed over the years. However, I knew that I was still looking for something, because I don't know how many jobs I've had in, like, I don't know, how many years was I working before I started my business? 20, maybe? 25? No, hold on. 20. Nearly 20. And that I probably had nearly 20 jobs. I had loads of jobs, because I would get frustrated, I would leave, I would just not understand why any of this mattered, I would not fit in, I would feel like they said one thing and it was actually another. And I think that is a real indicator as well that we are made for something different, right? I don't know if your work history is the same, but I hope that a lot of this resonates with you. This kind of feeling drained by jobs that didn't make sense, right? You know, you felt really frustrated by the red tape or the slow decisions or the lack of autonomy. You know, I can think of some really fabulous jobs that I had where I was just kind of left to my own devices and I made it something really great. And those ones stick in my mind because they were the ones that nurtured me. And I've been really fortunate to have a couple of really super bosses who have trusted me and engaged with me and let me kind of run things how I needed to run things. And I think that that makes such an enormous difference when you get someone who believes in you, because that's when you can really show your potential in things. So I had two. I think my favourite ever job that I had was when I worked for the British Psychological Society, and it was only a year's contract. So because I was their centenary officer, it was their centenary celebrations. And so I was organising all the stuff for their centenary. So it only lasted for a year because that was their celebration year. But I got to do so many really, really cool things. You know, Houses of Parliament, I had an exhibition in the Houses of Parliament and had a great big party in the Science Museum and got to organise Radio 4's Any Questions to come to as part of the celebrations. You know, all kinds of really cool stuff. And I was only in my 20s. But my boss there, Stephen, was he's died now, unfortunately. But he was such a supporter of me that whilst it was a stressful and challenging job, we all as a team, because I was part of the press team, we all as a team got to have an awful lot of fun with it as well. And we were all young, you know, so life was a bit different then. But you remember these things. And I think it's so important to kind of recognise and look as well, analyse why you like some jobs more than others and how you can understand what it was about that role that you really enjoyed. And so when it came to that role at the BPS, I loved the job, right? It was really super interesting. I went to London all the time and up to Glasgow and all over the place. And it was great. I worked with some really cool people, but I was allowed to be me. And I don't think I realised at the time, you know, for years later, this is 20 odd years ago now, that how important that was to me. And I think that's one of the indicators that we have as a kind of reason for setting up our own businesses and for starting as ourselves, because we just want to be who we are, right? We just want to be able to breathe in ourselves rather than being told to do it this way or to fit into that. And yes, there's protocols always, right? I mean, there's systems and structure and stuff that we all have to legal obligations we all have to comply with. But how we do that and how we approach that, that's where individuality is really so important. And maybe you'll recognize, maybe you're thinking, oh yeah, it's starting to make sense. And this is how you can then go on to build the business that you really want, by thinking, what did I really like about that? Do you know what? The people I worked with were great. Now I work on my own. Go find some people, right? Join some networking groups or set up a community of peers, or I don't know, spend more time on LinkedIn or somewhere chatting to the people that you enjoy chatting to. You can recreate the bits that you liked without having to go and get another job, I mean, if you want to get a job, get a job, that's fine. But I think it's quite interesting what we can learn from our own experience and see it through today's lens as to what it kind of means and why we are where we are. It's also very difficult for me to remember what it was like to have a job because it's 14 years ago. But the last job that I had, I worked for a college and I loved that job. And again, I had a huge amount of autonomy. I was a commercial development manager and I had my own off-site premises. I ran the building. It's not a huge building. It was like a floor of a building, but we ran all sorts of training courses there for companies, and the team were mine to manage pretty much. A couple of them had a different line manager, but yeah, they were my team. And I got to say, if it was really hot, I got to say, right, okay, let's go home early. If everybody's done what they need to do, let's go home early. And stuff like that, having the autonomy in a job to be able to treat people as adults, I think is massive. And I never checked it with them, being, you know, whoever it would need to be, because they might say no. And it's like, no, this is my department. That's fine. We're dealing with stuff. And, you know, being able to have fun and just talk to people and engage with people, it's always been really so important to me. And so when it went sour, because our targets, our achievement stats didn't match the central achievement stats, so I didn't get my 10 grand bonus and my sales team didn't get their, whatever they were on, 5,000 or 7,000 bonus. And I left and I just walked out and I'm just like, you are not screwing us over like this. This is disgusting. And I left. And after I left, the department was disbanded. They moved to a different premises and then ultimately disbanded and all of that. So that validated me a little bit too. But I absolutely loved that job. And so I think I still have some kind of scars from that, to be honest, that I never want to work for anybody ever again because you are not screwing me over. And I know that not every employer is like that. However, you are still just a number ultimately, right? You know, we're all replaceable in jobs, but we're not replaceable in our own businesses necessarily. And that, I think that really matters to me. I think my own importance in the world, really call that a crippling lack of self-confidence, if you will. But I think that kind of validation of knowing that if you don't show up, it doesn't exist. I get a huge amount of comfort and or power, maybe is the word, from that. It's important, right? I'm not saying it's important in terms of, you know, ending world hunger or, you know, stopping climate change or anything like that. But it's important within the circle that I'm in, right? It's important that I show up for my clients. It's important that I show up for this podcast because it makes a difference, right? You listen week in, week out, or maybe you're new, if so, hello. But you listen, you get something from it. It makes a positive difference to your life. And that matters to me, right? So when, you know, in that last job I had, when everything had, you know, when it didn't matter, all the good work that we'd done, we were just told, computer says no. I just combusted and that was never going to happen to me ever again. And I literally did walk out. I did get a settlement and ended up with my money and all that stuff. However, I had to completely change my life and I started my business with nothing. I knew people because I'd done a lot of networking and said, do you think I can make some money teaching people how to use social media for their business? And they all said yes. And I was like, boom, let's go. And it was £2,000. That's what it was. Do you think I can make a couple of grand a month doing this? And I remember that figure very, very clearly. In that first month, it was £127 that I invoiced and never been more proud of anything. So, you know, from humble beginnings and all that. But what I used was, you know, a lot of gumption, a lot of instinct and a huge amount of determination to build it into the business and to shape it over the last 14 years into what I do today with my Unstuck community and this Unstuck podcast and keynote talks that I do and you know, the other stuff. It's been a real journey. But I can certainly recognize those childhood things that I did of just thinking, oh, I can make some pom-poms and someone will buy them. The fact that I had a ready-made audience of my parents and my friend's parents and the, you know, whoever lived next door and whatever, That's that, you know, it really carries through to business because you can choose your audience, and we do all have audiences, and you can start your business by selling to friends and family, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It's from those tiny acorns that the mighty oak tree grows. Yeah, that's, it's so true. It's about just thinking, this can work. I'm going to do this. And having that real belief in yourself that you can do this thing, and it can be fun, and it can be interesting, and it can be exciting, and okay, I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And then you might lose interest, like is always the thing for me, because ADHD and all of that. But you can tweak it, you can change it, you can pivot it, you can turn pom-poms, you know, woolly pom-poms into a magazine if you want to, and into a tennis school. It doesn't matter. If you've got the skills and the dexterity to run a business, you can do it however you want and with whatever that you want to do. And I just think that's such a cool thing. But I will say, actually, that entrepreneur, having said I have an entrepreneurial streak, which I do for sure, calling myself an entrepreneur never kind of sits right with me. And I did want to do a survey about this, actually, on my Instagram stories back in the day, about what people called themselves. And entrepreneur was, I think, last in the list of, I don't know how many were, three or four things. Because to me, an entrepreneur is kind of really about like big growth, infrastructure growth, millions growth, and having investors and multifaceted businesses. You know, Richard Branson's an entrepreneur, right? He's got loads of businesses and he's the figurehead. I don't want to be that. I've never wanted to be that. And so entrepreneur sits a bit odd for me, a bit out of alignment as a title. Because what I'm building is freedom and alignment. And I hope that those are two goals that you want too. So what identity do you identify with? That's a terrible sentence. But are you a business owner? Are you a solopreneur? I don't know. I do use that sometimes. And honestly, I hate it. Solo business owner. You know, do you just do stuff? Well, I don't know. What it'd be really interesting for you to kind of ask yourself that question and see what identifies with you. I call myself a business owner. You know, I say that I work with solo business owners. That's, I go kind of really simple with that. But having the entrepreneurial streak is something very different, because I think that streak that within us, to have an entrepreneurialism in us, is different to being an entrepreneur. You know, having that, ooh, do you know what? I could do this. And here's another idea, actually, that develops on that previous idea. And this could all work. And this does work. And look at me making some money for myself. You know, that's very different. That's almost like a mindset rather than a title. So they're kind of different to me. And I absolutely do have an entrepreneurial streak. Yeah, there's all sorts of things that I think about that actually I would like to do as a business. But I rein myself in and I stick to this one for now. But who knows what's going to happen in 5 years in the future, right? And I think really that these challenges that we face in business, of which there are many and varied types, you know, they don't scare you off. They might derail you temporarily, but they don't scare you off completely. You know that this is what you still want to do. You know that you still want to work for yourself. You know that you still want to be making your version of pom-poms and selling them to the neighbours. That you know that that's what you want to do, right? It feels right. And that is such a massive tell, right? It's so telling that you're doing the right thing. It might not be in quite the right format for you at the moment. It might be that you want to tweak it slightly. It might be that you want to change your business model. But that's all okay, right? It's knowing you can do that for sure. It's that knowing that actually, this is, you know, you were born to not work for someone else. You were born to work for yourself. It was always meant to be. And that's such a powerful recognition. And I have times where I'm just like, oh, this is so hard. I'm so tired. I can't motivate myself anymore. But underneath all of that, I can't imagine having a job. I just can't imagine working for anybody else. I just think I would find the rules and the bureaucracy and the nonsense that goes with so many companies. I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd be like, well, why? Why do we have to do it? This doesn't make any sense. This does not make any sense. That I probably wouldn't last the day. So if you want to reach out and offer me a job, think very carefully about it. I don't think I would be a very good employee. Consultant, yes, for sure, that's very different. But employee, not so much. So what you've built already is something to be proud of. You know, the lives that you've already changed and the version of you that you are now that couldn't emerge if you were still doing a 9-to-5. You know, it's really something to be so proud of. It's showing the following generation that you can do things differently, that it isn't just the advice I got at school, which I'm sure that you got too, was kind of, you know, head down, work hard, get a job, get a profession, get a career, all of these things. There is a place for those in the world for sure. And without the people doing those things, well, I mean, the world would go to pot, right? But there's also this other space. This other space that we exist in, which is doing things differently, doing things the way that we want to, changing the world and making some money along the way. And it's utterly glorious. And I wouldn't change it for the world. You know, most days. Some days I would, but mostly I would not. And that's what I wanted to share with you today. And I'd love to hear your story about this. So you can email me or you can find me on social media. I'm Libby Langley, all over the place. And let me know kind of how you started. And I don't mean when you started your business. I mean how you started, right? Talk to me about when you were 10 and what you did and what happened and how really it was your destiny that you were going to become an entrepreneur, solo business owner, or work for yourself. Love to hear from you. All right. Thanks for joining me today on this episode of the Unstuck podcast. I will see you next time. Toodle bit. Bye. Thanks for listening to Unstuck. Make sure you follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you enjoyed today's show, I'd love it if you left a review. It really helps more solo business owners find the podcast and reminds them they're not alone. Want to chat about this episode or suggest a future topic? You'll find me on Instagram at Libby Langley. See you next week.